we're back. Welcome to No Direction, the Pathfinder News, Reviews, and Interviews podcast. I'm your host, Jefferson J. Thacker, also known as Param. And for this special interview, I'm joined by Stephen Glicker from Roll for Combat.
Hello.
And Mark Seifter. Hello, Mark. Hello, Stephen.
Hello. How are you, Param? Happy New Year.
Indeed. New Year. New year of podcast, new software that hopefully won't explode. You all were
you have a nice new mic. Connect. Look at that mic. Great. Damn.
Yeah, new mic. I love this mic. This is the Shure MV7. This is my new favorite podcast mic. Absolutely, hands down.
Cool.
Yeah. New year and all new stuff.
Yeah. And some new announcements. Now, we're not recording a special episode on a Sunday to be released later for no reason. You all have, Stephen, you came to me with some really exciting news. And so, Mark, Stephen, what's up? Why am I getting up and shaving on a Sunday?
I had to shave, too. We are here to announce that the BattleZoo line of products from Roll from Combat has been so successful that we have to continuously expand the world of BattleZoo, and we need more people. And Mark Seifter and I have been talking, and Mark is going to be coming on as the director of game design for the BattleZoo line of products. What that means is he's going to be in charge of everything. He's the master of the domain. I'm the publisher, but he is going to be working full-time on BattleZoo products. That includes BattleZoo Bestiaries, the Dragon Books, the upcoming BattleZoo Bestiary that's coming out next year, or actually now it's 2022, this year. Yeah, Strange and Unusual, as well as several unannounced products that you will find out about in the near future. But Mark is going to be very, very, very busy. And we're here to talk a little bit about his new role. We'll talk a little bit about dragons. We'll talk about why we're doing this, things like that.
So Mark, how are you feeling about this transition? This is a pretty big move.
Yeah. I'm really excited. I'm sad to leave like the team that I've been working with for so many years, and all of the people and my friends at Paizo, and you know, Linda is still at Paizo. And I'm very happy because the agreement that Steve and I are making is gonna allow me to keep freelancing, so I can stay in contact with everybody from Paizo. And I'm also just really, really excited. There's so much that is cool for BattleZoo. I'm excited to be the director of game design, so that's like a pretty substantial step up in terms of being able to exercise creative vision compared to when I was at Paizo. I was doing a ton of design, but there's also, you know, there are a lot of phases and steps that were above that with BattleZoo. It's kind of going to be me and Steven there at the top who are making those kind of calls. And that's really exciting to me.
Yeah, if I heard this announcement from just about any other third party company, this would have shocked me and surprised me. But like, honestly, no, this makes sense. You and Steven have been doing some excellent work together. It seems like you really like doing this. And then there's like for any of the users who don't know what the BattleZoo Bestiary is, Stephen, a couple of years ago, you took over the RPG Superstar contest again. And I was one of the judges. A lot of the No Direction people continue to serve as judges. I'll be doing it again this year with the Strange and Unusuals. Just disclaimer that we have some intervening interests here. But, as usual, you all made this really cool bestiary that has flavorful monsters and weird hook monkeys and talking pirate people that I've 3D printed minis of, and that's been fun. And it just sort of started to balloon into a bigger and bigger thing the longer that campaign is going. Can you kind of like go
into... forget the monster parts in the bestiary.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Forget the thing Mark wrote.
That was me.
So, yeah. Like, can you go into a little bit of how, like, hey, we're going to do this cool little monster book as part of RPG Superstar has then ballooned into you're becoming basically a publishing company now.
Yes, we are. Yeah, it actually happened in 2019. And that's when I approached Eric Mona at PAX. And I said, you know, if you're not using RPG Superstar, can I have it? Not really, but it was something like that where could we, you know, work together and can I bring it back to life? And I had some ideas, and he liked the ideas, and very quickly we worked it out. I built a website, and most importantly, I wanted to make it that a lot of people could win, because I loved RPG Superstar, but my biggest issue with it was that, like, there was only one winner. And more importantly, usually the runners up did very well too. The winner did well, but usually the four runners up also really got a step into the industry. So I wanted to make sure I came up with a way that everyone who participates, or at least a lot of people who participate, can get something, or at least get feedback at the minimum, so that they can get better if they want to break into the industry. So that's where we came up with the idea, because everyone always needs monsters. I've talked about this a lot. Monsters are the unsung heroes of RPG systems. You know, everyone talks about the characters and the world, but without monsters, there is no game. Like, the monsters, no one champions them. Well, I'm championing them. The monsters are probably the second most important thing in a game system, if not, in my opinion, maybe the first most important thing. If you don't have good monsters, you don't have a good game. And what's the thing that everyone remembers buying when they're kids? It's the monster manual. You don't hear people like waxing poetically about the DMG. You know, they talk about Fiend Folio, or they talk about the, you know, deities and demigods or monster manuals. So there we go. From there, the original plan was to have it come out. I was going to do the same judging. We have like public judging and private judging, and it was going to happen during PaizoCon and Gen Con. And then the book was going to be released at the PaizoCon in 2021. So everything was going to happen during the year 2020. Well, that did not happen for obvious reasons. So things changed. And then I realized, man, everything's canceled. Now what? Because I put a lot of time and effort into like planning this. This was like a lot of planning. So, you know, we were working on the book, myself and Patrick Rennie were, you know, editing the monsters. At that time, I came up with the idea for the monster system, which, you know, I play a lot of, you know, Monster Hunter, which, you know, it's, you know, semi-based on, I mean, no surprise there. It's like the ability to take monster parts and turn them into items, but that's in MMOs, that's in World of Warcraft, that's in a lot of systems, but it's never been in an RPG. So Mark and I started to talk, and I said, you know, let's figure out a system. He and I started to work on it. I wanted to add it to the bestiary because we needed the bestiary to be at least 160 pages. Here, I'm giving you all the nitty-gritty behind it. And 101 monsters, or I think it's like 114 in the end, it's not 160 pages. So we need more pages. So we're like, okay, we'll add some cool stuff. And we added Monster Mage and, you know, a Vestige Hunter and some backgrounds, but monster parts, that was the big part of it. And then I was all ready to release the book. So we skipped to 2021 and I finished the book. It's actually done. I even announced that it was done. That's how done it was. And it was going to go to the printer. And then I was talking to some friends of mine at Blizzard, and they're like, Steve, why don't you do a Kickstarter? And they were all like, what are you doing? Like, You'll make this book and you'll probably sell, you know, 100 copies or so, or, you know, whatever. You'll sell it to the people at Roll for Combat, the podcast. And I was like, all right, fine. So they talked to them more and more. And these are some people who had very, very successful Kickstarters, to say the least. And they thought I had a good one. So I was like, oh, okay. So literally on a 2-hour drive in the middle of the summer in June, this is in June of 2021, I'm like, all right, I guess I'll do a Kickstarter. And this is the end of June, and I suddenly started to contact Mark and Linda and Ron and everyone else I could. I said, hey, what can you help me out with? Mm-hmm. And we'll get to Mark's part, but Mark's like, you know, I had this idea for a dragon book. And I'm like, got
it. I had already been talking with you about that. Yes. before the Kickstarter, because, you know, I finished the monster parts. Right. Like Steven said, the book was done. And so, sorry. Steven was saying, well, what's next? And he told me a little bit about Strange and Unusual, the next bestiary that's coming out soon. He already knew about that. He had it all planned out in advance. I said, okay, that's cool. Here's my idea for a short product. We could make a PDF that lets you play the chromatic dragons, and then we could expand it later with another small PDF that can play the metallic dragons. And then if it's successful, we can add in another group of dragons or something like that as an ancestry. And Steven's like, that's cool, but I would want to do at least the first two together because, like, people are going to like this. And he was very, very enthusiastic about doing it eventually. But when the Kickstarter started, he realized, let's just do all of them. And so it suddenly became this like giant book that I was writing unexpectedly. And it was very surprising, but it was also very awesome because this is a book that when I was like at home after like having created, work to create Pathfinder Second Edition, it was out for a few months. I was brainstorming like, what would I want to do if I was launching my own third party company? What would my starting product be? And this is what I thought it would be. But art is expensive and there's a lot of risks in starting off. And I was like, I don't know if I would make a profit if I did this. I might lose money on it. So I told it to Steven and he was like, yes. And it has become something that is far more outrageous and awesome than the humble little PDF series that I was going to potentially do at first. Like the Kickstarters loved this dragon book. They bought a lot of it. They cracked so many stretch goals that added more and more to it that now it's like going to come in somewhere over 100 pages of dragon ancestries and add-ons. It's not just like, oh, it's anything about dragons. We put in a lot of pages of like magic items or something. Like this book is on topic. It's about playing Dragon Ancestries with lore and the rules you need and lots of cool stuff about that.
Yeah.
When Steven showed me like a little advanced copy of the book to kind of to wet my whistle here, my first reaction is often as it is anytime Steven shows me anything, which is, holy crap, Steven, what the heck? How are you going to do a billion of these? It's like, there's, what is it, 40-some dragons?
45.
45
heritages, types each of dragons. Which has like multiple feats and abilities.
Mm-hmm. Which give you an idea. There's only 39 official Pathfinder 2nd Edition dragons, so had to come up with new ones.
And like I could already tell, like Mark had touched this book just by like, oh, this is polished. Oh, the math is stupidly tight. Yeah. This is something Mark did, because I mean, if there's one thing Mark that you're known for is like really tight balanced game rules. Is that fair assessment of your abilities?
I think that I'm known for a variety of things, but one of them is definitely coming up with game rules that are fun and deliver the fantasy that people want to play while also being balanced so that you don't have to worry about, as a GM, adding them into your game. And that is why I wanted to do dragons and not just like anybody could do dragons, but I thought that a dragon book that was done by me that has my personal guarantee, which I would like to place on all of my work, that is just like, I'm going to make this so it will be reasonable in your games. It's not going to break anything. And if it does break something, my guarantee is you can come onto my Discord or on my stream or something like that and ask for help getting it back in line, and I will do my best to find you a way to get it to work for your game. But that's just sort of, I would say I am known for that. Among other things, I hope that people also enjoy like my lore text and all sorts of other little elements that I put in.
Yeah, you're also a lore library. You're a walking library of awesome lore, and you do spin a good yarn yourself. So I don't want to belittle your talents to just being the math person, but when I'm dealing with third party books, especially something this ambitious, like I need to trust that the designer knows their stuff. And there are very few people that know the intricacies of, say, Pathfinder 2nd Edition as well as you do.
Well, I would say that given the percentage of like the final Pathfinder 2nd Edition core rulebook that was done by myself and Logan, and if you add in myself and Logan, it was a lot. Logan has told me that he thinks that I may have done over half. I don't think that I did, but I think it was maybe a little bit under that. But I know that if you add up Logan and me, that we got over 75%, because during that time frame, Stephen was making sure Stephen Rodney McFarland, who was there, was making sure that the bestiary was going to work out. Jason Bowman was doing a lot of promotional streams, and he had some really, really cool stuff that was really important. But the ones who were in there doing the book were me and Logan for the most part. So I would say it's pretty clear, and that people would not dispute that, like, Logan Bonner and I are the ones who know what's in there and the nitty gritty the most of anyone.
And the other thing that you're very well known for is handling a playtest. And this has been playtested extensively, hasn't it?
Yes. There was a like private playtest, but with a there was a somewhat not open but not completely closed call towards people who had already purchased the Dragon Book in, on the Kickstarter. And so they joined in on the private playtest, and there was just a lot of discussion about every single factor, and they found a huge number of really interesting details and points of things that I could add onto the dragons. Plus, there were a decent number of playtests that were just reading the transcripts of them were so epic, because a lot of them had these big fights. Some of them did one-on-ones, which are not always the number one best playtest for a party game, but the one-on-ones were so cool. They would be like, I put my ridiculous dragon using this book up against an ancient dragon that was not using this book, and we duked it out. And it was like, it was epic, and it came, and we, you know, they did an extreme encounter because of course they did. And they're like, it was epic, and it came down to it, and I was going to finish him off, and I missed. And then the enemy dragon went, and they whiffed their whole turn, and I finished him off on the next round. And it was like, wow, okay. Even I didn't expect that necessarily a one-on-one was going to be like that that perfect and down to the wire, but that was it was super exciting to read it, and I just love the enthusiasm of everyone in the playtest.
So let me ask the both of you, what is important about, like, that you all get right with, hey, let's do a book where we play dragons, but they also have to fit next to halflings and Conrasu. Like, how does this work? Like, how is playing a dragon in your new system?
So basically, my goal was that you feel like you're 100% playing a dragon. Your character is a dragon. You have the fantasy of that, the mindset of a dragon, but that it's going to be balanced so that if you're playing with a Conrasu and a halfling, then it's not going to be like, oh, well, you know, the dragon is obviously the best. So the first, I mean, it might be obviously the best in terms of being cool, but I mean, in terms of mechanics and in terms of like, oh yeah, well, yeah, the dragon could defeat the rest of their party alone and they're just overpowered. We didn't want to do that. So there are a variety of lore and mechanical elements that I have kind of woven together in an attempt to make this work. So first of all, there's a special ritual called the Lux Aeterna ritual that exists in the world of Battlezoo, the world of Alucard. And you can add it to any world. It's not, it has no world specificity. It's a very, very intentionally mysterious ritual that some dragon came up with. A lot of different types of dragon are pretty sure that their kind of dragon came up with the ritual because of course, their dragon is the best or has some reason that they would have done it. And the Lux Aeterna ritual allows a dragon to potentially get stronger much faster. See, dragons are powered by magic. When you look at the at how heavy they are, like their wings would not be able to make them fly via physics. Their breath, like the way it works, it's magical. It even has magical traits. So everything a dragon is doing is infused with magic. And the Lux Aeterna ritual, what you do is you draw forth the potential of your magic, like from your own future, you shove it into yourself, which short circuits it for a moment, and you lose access to some of what you had, which is better if you're younger when you do it, because it takes you to the same starting point, regardless of what your age category would have been. It even shrinks you down if you were some really big dragon when you did it. And then your magic starts growing at an incredibly rapid pace. So you don't need to wait millennia to get stronger, to get larger, to grow and gain powers that you want. Instead, it's like a muscle. You have to exercise it by doing these really stressful or really difficult things. And dragons have determined that the best way to do this is to go adventuring, because you're always thrown into the deep end. Mm-hmm. And that's going to be how you get strong so much faster than any other dragon can. Now, this has led to massive societal differences among different groups of dragons who, depending on what your dragon heritage is, the way that the dragons who don't perform the ritual think about the dragons who did perform the ritual can change. It can be antagonistic. It can be like, oh, those poor dragons who did the ritual, what have they done to themselves? And there's a lot of interplay and sort of there's ways to like change the social dynamics and to think about your character. And so that's on the lore side. Now, on the mechanical side, the way that this works is that ancestry feats in Pathfinder 2nd edition, they have a certain power level. That power level is intentionally lower than your class. The reason why is, if you think about it, if you have a group that's an elf wizard, an elf fighter, an elf cleric, and an elf rogue, you want those to feel like a rogue, a cleric, a fighter, and a wizard rather than the same character. Whereas if you have a group that is four rogues, you want that like a dwarf rogue, an elf rogue, a human rogue, and a halfling rogue. That's the group that probably should feel more similar to each other. Obviously, rogues have some versatility in them as a class. All the classes do. We try to do that, right? But you want the one that's four elves of the four different classes to feel like it's doing more different things. So you're not going to put like a feat in the elf ancestry that's like elf devastation, and it's like some kind of powerful like damaging strike that you can use every round, and that's just better than your normal strike and is better than power attack. It's like, oh yeah, anybody who's a martial character who's an elf will just take elf devastation every round. They'll use that. If you're a barbarian, you'll use elf devastation. If you're a fighter, you use elf devastation. If you're a champion, you use elf devastation. No, you don't want that, right? You want people to have awesome cool tricks from their ancestry, but you don't want that to like overshadow what's in their class and make that ancestry the same. The problem is with dragon, you sometimes actually do want a lot of your tricks to be from being a dragon. You don't always want you might want it so that the dragon wizard is more like other dragons depending on what you want to do with that character than they are like the human wizard. And so the answer to that is an archetype. It is a dragon-specific archetype. And so you have to be a dragon to even take that archetype. And the archetype gives class feats, and it uses your class feats too. And there's actually two of them. One for, because of the fact there's kind of two kinds of dragons in the bestiaries in Pathfinder 2nd edition, the like I beat you up dragon and the mage that kind of switches out some of those abilities for lots and lots of spells. You now can play a Draconic Ravager or Dragon Mage. And when you take those dedications, they unlock a smorgasbord of class feats that are just like, yeah, this is a devastating bite. It does so much damage. This devastating bite you got from dragon, like the elf devastation when I was talking about before, this might be the thing that you always do in a lot of fights, like that your go-to move is devastating bite. And that's okay because you chose it as an archetype. Just like if you chose archer archetype or something like that, you might get an archery trick that you did every time. And so that's sort of how I use both lore and mechanics and brought them together. And by taking both sides, I believe that it solves this conundrum that you were bringing up, which is absolutely a problem with playing dragons as your character, which is how do we do it so you feel like you're a dragon, it makes sense to you, and you're balanced with the rest of the group. Now, if you feel that your dragons and your GM does too, and everyone in your group feels dragons should have more of their power not lost to the Lux Save Turner ritual, good news. I have sidebars all over the place in this book for customizing it. And so it talks about you have options. One of the options is, hey, throw in Ancestry Paragon and Free Archetype. The dragons get the dragon stuff, but give it to the other ancestries too. So the halfling and the Khonrasu you were talking about, they also get more stuff, so it's balanced. There's also another option, which is the option of our group doesn't care. We actually do want the dragon to be overpowered and better than other ancestries, in which case just give it to the dragons and nobody gets something else. And that's fine too. Or just like literally give the dragons any of these feats. Instead of Ancestry Paragon, you can just be like, oh, this particular feat, all the dragons get for free. And yes, it's better than every other ancestry, but we've decided that's what we want to do. This is one of my hallmarks in design, even all the way back to Pathfinder Unchained, which is my first like real design credit in at Paizo, is flexibility, modding your game, and being able to make it work for your group and what you exactly want. And that's why it's full of sidebars of like different variants and different ways to handle it, so that you can take, you can trust that the baseline is going to work for a baseline game and be balanced, but then you can make it your own.
Now, one of the things that did surprise me when I started to see some of the art, Stephen, that you were showing me about these characters, and some that some never before seen art that we're about to throw up on screen here, is these dragons do look like characters. They don't look like just generic stock art. I picked this up when I bought my katana from Bud K characters. They look like actual playable characters with personality. Oh,
I love that investigator.
Yeah, this is definitely my personal favorite of the last batch. So these are new dragons. What can you tell me about this set of dragons here, Stephen?
Those are the new dragons that we have invented for the world of Battle Zoo and the world of Alucard, and they are the wild dragons. You know, we have to have a name for every type of group of dragons. There's obviously chromatic and esoteric and imperial. Well, these are the wild dragons, and that's the indigo dragon, and each of them has a certain personality trait. But the thing about dragons I noticed is when we're reading through them, because, you know, that's what I've been doing is reading dragons, they're all like devastatingly powerful, and none of them seem to be like kind of fun. None of them seem to be, hey, let's just party with the humans. So we kind of made these a little bit more fun, and we kind of made them a little bit more personable. They're not all about power and domination. For example, the indigo dragon, which is the one with the mug, they're party animals, man. They literally are party dragons. They're the party animals. They're the life of the party. They live to party, and they love to hang out with other races and ancestries and party with them. And even when they're like dragons, because we're going to be having both. We're going to have them both as PC dragons, as well as true dragons that you can fight and battle. But the aspect of them being party animals is going to be in the stat block. They're going to want to, like, you could probably parlay with them. You know, it's like, hey, you want some of their treasure? Well, you got a rager I can go to. Maybe we can work something out. You know, I mean, that's going to be a big part of it. And again, I'm just trying to turn something different with dragons out there. And each one of these also, just from the look and feel, we try to do something a little bit different. A lot of them have, well, these dragons, they all have tattoos, which actually harness their power. They all have different colors you haven't seen before. Like, the most requested was an orange dragon, which actually I thought too. Like, orange dragon? Why do we have an orange dragon? We have all the other colors. So it's, we have an amber dragon. Amber. Close enough. And that's the other thing. We used the not the primary colors, not the secondary colors, not the tertiary colors, but the quaternary colors. So we have amber, Corellian, Harlequin, indigo, and vermilion. And so, you know, there's more to come. Trust me, there's a lot of colors out there. But, you know, we tried to mix it up. But as for the artwork, if we were going to do this book, I looked at all the artwork. First of all, there's not as much artwork on dragons as you might think. There really isn't. Second of all, it's all the same. It's all dragons fighting adventurers and being nasty and evil. So if you want to be a dragon and you want to play as a dragon PC, you need artwork. And you need something to represent you. So I got busy. You know, we basically said, okay, let's find, first we have 45 dragon types. I'm like, okay, I went to my artist and said, okay, we need 45 dragon types of every single dragon. And let's just hit every type of race and ancestry and class we can think of. And we're like, okay, here's the fighter. Here's the mage. He has an assassin in there. He did the investigator. We have, you name it. We even got some of the newer classes in there that aren't even out yet. The ones that you're working on, Mark, for Dark Archive. We got some in there. We have every type you can imagine. And then when he finished those up, I said, okay, do it again. Do another 45. We need at least 100 images, because you're going to want to represent your character. And this is the only way you can do it. Obviously, there's a lot of tools out there now that you can make, you know, dragon minis and stuff, which is awesome. But in terms of pictures and images, I felt it was very important. And also, this is something, you know, people have seen dragons in one way for so long. Like, the number one thing I was seeing on Reddit over and over and over again was like, you can't make a dragon PC. You can't make it. Everyone was saying that. And they're like, it'll be too powerful. It loses the dragonness if they can't, like, kill everyone. And I kept saying, no, you're wrong. You're wrong, wrong, wrong. Dragons start off as level one. Everything starts off somewhere. And yeah, maybe they're kind of nasty at level one, but they start off just like everyone else. Everyone starts from something. And the way Mark set it up, he set it up really well, is that if you want to be a dragon like any other ancestry and not take the archetype, you will be no different than an elf or a human. Like, you'll have cool dragon aspects of you and you'll look like a dragon, but you'll still be a fighter. You'll be a fighter dragon. But if you want to say, I want to go full dragon, that's when you take the archetype. And then, you know, you sacrifice a little bit in terms of maybe some class features or some other feats you might take, but you get very dragony very quickly.
You don't have to give up any class features. It's no, like class, regular archetypes. It's all feats. Okay. I would say that you won't be just like a human or an elf. You'll be very clearly a dragon if you don't take the archetype.
But, I meant in terms of power level. Power level.
Yes, yes. You'll exactly be, you won't be overshadowing the human or elf character who's in your same party. Absolutely. Right.
But that could totally be just like a dragon that just wants to be the best investigator that's ever looked at a magnifying glass.
Great. Yeah, you can still get a bunch of dragon stuff. Yeah. It's not going to be like some of those feats that are replacing and becoming, is like, I'm never studying target anymore because I have this dragon feat that I'd rather use. Actually, honestly, a dragon investigator with devastating bite would be a pretty powerful build because it's one big bite. So you just, what you do is you study your target, and if it's a high roll, you bite them with a devastating bite. And if it's not, you bite someone else with a devastating bite or do something else. Because then you've got that big damage chunk that you're guaranteed to get a success on, or a critical success if you have it, if it's really high, that you know in advance. So it actually would work as a combo there.
Yeah, and one thing I want to mention is that the way Mark wrote it is that each dragon type plays differently. So it's not like, oh, okay, you know, well, the black dragon plays exactly the same as the indigo dragon or a silver dragon or a gold dragon. No, they play differently. They have different feats and they have different abilities unlocked depending upon the ancestry. And there's something like 200 feats. I don't know how many there
are. There's a lot, and more are coming.
There is more feats than most classes. This ancestry... You can play a dragon. I say this. It's like you can play a dragon and build a dragon every week for the next year, and no two would even be close to.
I believe that the life. Draconic Ravager archetype alone already has more feats than most classes, and it's about to get more because it doesn't have all of its feats yet.
Yeah, it's out of control.
It's a lot of options, and what the reason why is all 45 of those dragons have unique features, like Steven said. Now, I mean, you could build a dragon that's exactly the same across multiple heritages by taking some of the common ground feats. I made enough common ground feats that you could, but there's some cool unique
feats. Why would you?
I don't know. Like, there's some cool unique feats that are available only to certain heritages, and you'll recognize them because you'll have seen them in your Pathfinder 2nd Edition bestiary, probably, because if it's in a bestiary, like, I worked to, like, so, you know, sometimes tweak things to be more of a PC ability rather so that it would, like, scale, because sometimes the dragon ability just, like, has, this is a set amount because we know it's this one dragon. But so they're not exactly the same, but they are, like, heavily inspired by slash named, like, the abilities that you'll see on the dragons in your bestiary. So if there's some ability for a dragon to, like, have an aura of cold around it in the bestiary, then you'll find a feat where you have an aura of cold around you and things like that.
All right. Well, gentlemen, it is wonderful been talking about all this with you. This sounds exciting. It looks like we've got a lot of fantastic things to look forward to here. So if people are, of course, interested in playing a dragon, getting involved, where should they go? What should they look for? And what do they have to look forward to?
Well, that's a lot. They can go to battlezoo.com and you can get the book now. The battlezoo.com will list all of our products, but the Dragon Ancestry book, the Pathfinder version, should be out, I'm saying by February, maybe by the end of February, and the PDF will be released immediately. So as soon as the book is released and ready to go, it will come out. So if you order it, you'll get it the minute it's out. If you order the hardcover, you will get the PDF for free, and then you'll get both. So you won't miss out on anything. And I will have to mention that this is going to be available for both Pathfinder and 5e. Actually, all of our products are available for both Pathfinder and 5e. So that will be something that Mark will also be working on, is some of the 5e stuff. But we build everything in Pathfinder first. And so everything we're doing is built specifically for Pathfinder and using the Pathfinder rules. And then we have another team as well as Mark that adjusts it over. So you can go to, as I said, BattleZoo to
what we found out. Is that since Pathfinder second edition sometimes has like more nitty gritty or different formulas and things that you're putting in, it's much easier to build it in Pathfinder second edition first and then convert to 5e than it would be if we built it in 5e and then converted to Pathfinder second edition. That would be pretty challenging because we might have tough. Created some things that just kind of don't slot in. Whereas what we've been finding so far is the Pathfinder second edition rules. It's just like, oh yeah, this slots in here into 5e. You sometimes have to extrapolate or use some of the knowledge from this team of how to put in things such as the monster parts, for example, are an economy and 5e doesn't, kind of use like money for magic items and things like that as much. But so there are some things that are tricky, but it's much easier to go that way.
Awesome. Thank you all very much. BattleZoo.com. Of course, RollForCombat.com if you want to listen to Steven's wonderful podcasts. And Mark, you do still doing Arcane Mark, correct?
That's right.
Still going to keep going?
Yeah. Wonderful. Arcane Mark. And you can find it at twitch.tv/ArcaneMark. Mm-hmm. Every week on Tuesdays mm-hmm. at 7 Pacific and Saturdays at 10 a.m. Pacific.
Excellent. And if you want more from No Direction, you can do so over at NoDirectionPodcast.com, and you can support us over at Patreon.com/NoDirection, as well as find us on all the appropriate social media. Until next time, everyone, I'm Jefferson J. Thacker, also known as Param, and if you want to find the path, you need No Direction.